The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. Grace Parra and Megan Bailey are here with me today.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, I thought we were going to do that thing again that we did last time.
Hello. You say like last week, like it happened last week instead of us recording this exactly right after.
We did take a cookie break and that's
it. We did.
It.
We had, there are holiday cookies galore.
Galore.
And no one is eating them yet.
No.
And I'm like, we don't even really work here.
I'm wearing very tight Fashion Nova jeans that I spent $23 on and...
A little housekeeping before we get into our special year in review episode. First of all, if you have hills you'll die on, you can send them to us in 30-second voice memo form to hysteria@crooked.com. But you will not be hearing them for a while because in the month of January, we are taking a hiatus. I'm going to be out of the country for part of the month. Caroline is going to be out. We're going to be doing some kind of retooling and bring you season two of Hysteria starting in February. So sorry about a month off. I think that there are probably other ways that you can occupy yourself.
Yeah, think about what you're going to get me for my birthday.
Yeah, that's Megan's February 17th, everybody.
Think about what you're going to get me for my wedding.
Think about Megan.
Exactly. Think about Megan and the gifts that you're going to get her.
Megan the whole time. But we're excited to bring you season two. When it comes back, I guarantee you that it'll be worth the wait. I can't guarantee you that.
Yes, you can.
You can,
Erin. You're going to like the way you look. I guarantee it.
Ugh, Men's Warehouse.
Dude, can you imagine a female version of Men's Warehouse?
Dress barn.
Dress barn. What happened to Dress Barn? Does this still exist?
It's around.
It's kicking around.
Yeah, girl, you got to go to the Minnesotas and Indianas of the world.
Yes. I love that.
Dress barn is
Fashion
thriving.
Nova. Yeah. I got to get to Dress Barn.
Dress Barn is the jam.
All right.
First, let's get to some time to reflect seriously on this year that has just passed us. Here's something that I was thinking about as I was putting this outline together. I remember 2016 is the year where everything felt like it was kind of like locomotive heading toward the apocalypse. 2017 was everybody just kind of reeling and being like, wait, what's happening? What's happening?
Yeah.
2018 seemed like a year of silver linings to me. Yeah. Even the things that happened that were bad had very clear silver linings. In 2016, the silver lining of Trump getting elected wasn't immediately apparent. But in 2018, we see what that silver lining was. That silver lining was that women got extremely motivated and involved. Mm-hmm. Civic engagement among Democrats was just off the charts. California woke up and became a force to kind of push the U.S. back in the right direction. So I thought it was good. I thought it was a good year despite some of these stories not being great. One of the biggest ones this year was the Supreme Court. I think you all remember how it felt to watch Kennedy retire. That was, I think, our first episode of Hysteria was the day that he retired, announced he was retiring.
That's right.
Which was crazy. He announced he was retiring, and then we got Brett Kavanaugh, and we had Christine Blasey Ford's testimony that Brett Kavanaugh was actually a sexual predator when he was in high school, and that all felt very disheartening to watch. But I also felt like there was a silver lining to it.
Of course. We got to hear this amazing woman give testimony, and she had space, finally, a nationwide platform to speak about these ills that, you know, obviously affected her on a very personal level, but I think were so resonant for so many hundreds of thousands of women across America, too, if not more.
It brought up a lot of trauma for a lot of survivors, but it also, I think, in the fold of that, you saw, oh my gosh, there's so many people that mm-hmm. have been through this. And so it really gave a voice to that too. Mm-hmm. This is something that could not be ignored. And, you know, the Me Too movement was very much like in full swing, almost sort of at its like tail end, running on fumes. And I think that this kind of lit it up again of like, no, this is not going to be like a trend. This is going to be something that is sustainable. We're not going to put up with this anymore.
Mm-hmm. It's not a moment. It's a movement.
Ooh.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly. And it felt like it had legs in all these different areas. I'm going to move to the next story that I think was really relevant to a lot of our listeners and to us in 2018. The story of Larry Nassar. Larry Nassar was sentenced to 40 to 175 years in prison on sexual assault charges. This is after he, as team doctor to USA Gymnastics and as a doctor at Michigan State, allegedly, well, he did assault 156 women and girls, more than 156 women and girls. But in his trial, one of the things that was really an inspiring moment in a horrible story was that 156 women and girls made statements over 7 days about what he had done to them. And they did it publicly and they stood up and it was incredible. Megan, as somebody who works, you know, in and adjacent to sports, how important did this moment feel to you in 2018?
That sentencing was so important. You know, a female judge was like, no, you're going to sit here and listen to all of this. Had it been a male judge, I don't know if the same outcome would have happened. And those survivors have continued to be in the forefront of the fight to have USA Gymnastics now answer for what they've done. This, unfortunately, was a systematic breakdown on every level. And this could happen in really any organization. I do think sports is probably a place that it has a higher chance of happening because you want success. And that's like what these girls were taught to do. Like, you got to just do whatever you can to be the best. And it really, really woke people up. I've said it before. All survivors came to the ESPYs, stood in front of the world's biggest, most famous, most powerful athletes, and with their presence, we're like, you're going to look at us. You're not going to forget that this happened. And we're going to ensure that the Sanduskis and the Nassars of the world are held to the fucking fire.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you bring up a really good point, too, about the fact that this could happen in any organization. And what's interesting to see now, too, the USOC is in the process of really examining their culpability with this, too. So we're understanding, I think, that what happened within USA Gymnastics is not extant only to that.
Yeah.
To
and
that
Michigan State.
And Michigan State, too. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think it's a rebuilding year. And I'm really excited to see what happens with gymnastics after this, because the silver lining in all this for me is like they're going to get new leadership. There's going to be a whole new crop of people leading the charge with this very important field that people love. I mean, we love this sport. America loves this sport. We understand the athleticism behind it. We understand the passion of these young women. It's something that unites us every 4 years. And we have a responsibility, I think, as a nation to remind ourselves of that and remind the survivors of this, too, that what they've given us as, you know, in terms of entertainment and as far as like us seeing the athleticism of this incredible, unbelievably challenging sport is irreplaceable. So I think that's a silver lining too. I'm glad you brought that up as a topic, Erin.
Allie Reisman is a gold medalist too. Mm-hmm. This is not in sports. A lot of times it's like, you know, you hear about this about sexuality in male dominated sports.
Yeah.
Like you need like a star. Well, you have your star. Mm-hmm. This is spearheaded by one of the biggest stars the sport has seen in recent years.
Yep.
So you need to listen to her.
Yep. Yeah, she's so fearless. Also, like, part of being a gymnast is to be fearless.
Yes.
And so to antagonize gymnasts is like, okay, great idea, idiot. Like,
they
are fearless and they can withstand intense amounts of pressure. And they are, gymnasts are, if anybody is going to be the one to take down a systemic problem in sports, I think that it's going to be gymnasts. Like, and that's an exciting thing. Another story that was an awful story that had some silver linings. On February 14th, the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, 14 students and 3 staff members were killed. But after that happened, the students that were impacted immediately, like the gymnasts, made us look at them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were out in public. They were leading marches. They were talking to the media. They were advocating for themselves and for gun safety. And it culminated in March, the March for Our Lives in March, which was so impressive. Mm-hmm. Did you guys go to the March for Our Lives?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I also did an event months ago with several of the students from Parkland who spoke about, you know, what was happening in the wake of both the shootings and then kind of after March for Our Lives, where we go from here, and to see the determination that they have to continue talking about this subject well beyond just what happened at their school, well beyond the march, is incredible. It's mm-hmm. incredible. The silver lining there is very clear to me, too. Mm-hmm.
And earlier this month, we had Shannon Watts on the show from Moms Demand Action.
Yeah.
And she talked about the Parkland High School students being instrumental in giving us such a huge electoral win in November when it comes to gun safety. We have more advocates for gun safety that got elected to Congress this year than we have in recent memory. And that's incredible. So last story I wanted to talk about in our year in review is, it kind of dovetails with this, is the 2018 election. Mm-hmm. And this is, I think, the ultimate silver lining, because now we're seeing, what did we do with all the rage that we had mm-hmm. in 2016? Mm-hmm. I think in other historical moments, people have channeled it into things that maybe weren't as like immediately evident. You know, like we channeled it into getting out there, canvassing, electing people in districts where nobody thought Democrats could win. Like, we flipped, how many districts in California did we flip from Dem to Republican? Mm-hmm. It was incredible. Mm-hmm. 125 women were elected to Congress. That's 102 to the House, 14 to the Senate, and 9 as governors. 45 women of color were elected to the House, 1 to the Senate, 1 as governor. 106 of those were Democratic women.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of amazing. It's really cool to see the people that we're electing looking like the people that are electing them.
Yeah.
You know, like it's women, it's people of color. Here are some women that won in November that are super exciting. Charisse Davids, one of the first Native American women elected, mm-hmm. who is an MMA fighting lesbian.
Hell yeah. Such a badass. She's such
Kansas.
A badass.
She's so amazing.
Yes.
I just want to like be your pen pal.
I just wanted to fight people for me. Him. Get him.
We have Deb Haaland, another of the first Native American women elected. We have Ayanna Pressley, mm-hmm. who I have a huge girl crush on, the first Black woman elected to Congress from Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. We have Rashida Tlaib, the first Muslim American woman elected to Congress from Michigan. We also have Ilhan Omar, another Muslim American woman mm-hmm. elected Minnesota's 5th, who is part of the like dynamic duo. She and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez
yep.
mm-hmm. are like now the besties in everybody's ships
yeah.
in Congress, which is great. We had the first two Latinas elected to Congress from Texas, Veronica Escobar and Sylvia Garcia.
Love that.
Oh, yeah. You're a Texan.
I am a Texan.
You're a Texan.
Yeah. And a Latina.
And a Latina.
There you go.
No big deal. Can't wait to go celebrate.
That's going to be great. Texas is going to turn purple.
It definitely is.
It's
so
like
close.
Really, really on the way.
Yeah.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the youngest woman ever elected to Congress, followed closely by Iowa's Abby Finkenauer, who is also amazing and super impressive. Oh, we also had Lucy McBath, Georgia 6th.
Yeah, that's right.
Unseating Karen Handel, who was just this crazy zealot. And now we have Lucy McBath, who literally is a mom who is reeling from tragedy in her own life and became an activist and is now a congressman.
Yeah.
That's like a silver lining.
So cool. And it seems like people are pretty fired up. We've got Nancy Pelosi about to get the gavel. How do you feel about Nancy getting her power back?
You know, I was sort of like, when it first, because this wave of younger, you did feel that like maybe it's, and I think over the last few weeks we've just seen, no, Nancy's the best at this. And you can still have this influx of young, new blood.
But respect to the OGs. I'm going to throw Dianne Feinstein in there as well. She's somebody that I think has been around for a long ass time. She has done so much for our state specifically, and good for her for sticking around and doing the damn thing. Both of these ladies are doing the work. It's awesome. It's awesome to see.
Yeah. Yeah. Nancy really is kicking some ass. And just talking to Representative Karen Bass last week, really gave me the sense that like everybody is really getting really excited about mm-hmm. 2019. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you listeners are politically engaged and were out there. You were sending me DMs. You're sending us tweets. You're emailing us about how involved you were and how like you were channeling your rage and your disappointment in what the state of America was into something positive. And mm-hmm. like, we wouldn't be here if it weren't for people like you. So should pat yourselves on the back because this has been a really amazing 2018. Mm-hmm. Despite having bad things happen, we've always picked ourselves up, brushed ourselves off, and carried on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so, you guys are so fucking inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
So cool. lighter news stories from 2018. One review.
Yes.
Yes.
This news story, I don't care.
You got so swept up.
You
it's
really
baffling.
Sweet, cute.
I love Meghan Markle and Prince Harry. I just love them.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I have a friend who's a fan of the royals who described the royal family as like expensive pets that England has agreed to just keep. And I just love them. I just think they're so adorable.
The whole family, or no, just
I just think Meghan and Harry are super cute.
I'm wishing them the best. Yeah. I'm excited for that. I don't like all this hate against Meghan Markle because I want to like her. I met her once.
What? Oh,
very briefly. Yeah.
Oh, bury the lead.
Yeah.
How?
Yeah. Yeah. It was suits. It was suits. No, I was on the nightly show and she came by and I think she was on the nightly show for an episode or maybe she was coming to meet with the producer about like doing a pre-interview or something, and I met her backstage very briefly. This is way before she even started dating Harry.
But she had gone
to college with somebody that was on the show. And
she went to Northwestern.
She went to Northwestern, that's right. And so they exchanged pleasantries, and she was very sweet, and I met her. She's just, you know, beautiful and classy and all the things. And this is pre-Harry.
Pre-Harry,
and I was very impressed. Huh. I was like, that's a beautiful, classy lady.
That's a princess.
Yeah. That's a princess. That's
princess material.
So the next story is like, this was a pure joy story. The next story is kind of an ugly joy story.
Yeah.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders got asked to leave the Red Hen restaurant in Lexington, Virginia. I think that's great.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
Yes.
People shouldn't be allowed. I mean, I think that people who work for Donald Trump shouldn't just expect to be able to waltz into places that are good. Like, okay, yeah, that's what you want to do. You should only be able to eat in places owned by people who voted for Donald Trump. Cracker Barrel or whatever.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, seriously.
That's how I feel about television, though. I'm like, every time, you know, the number one shows, all CBS, ABC, I'm like, y'all, everybody on TV hates you. You know, like they have you don't get to watch this. These actors don't like you.
I feel like there was a low key Sarah Huckabee Sanders joke in the movie The Favorite, which I just saw.
Really?
Yeah. There's a joke in there that doesn't really make a ton of sense where like the queen is wearing bad makeup and Rachel Weisz's character is like, you look like a badger. And the queen is like kind of hurt and she's like, aren't you glad I told you that you looked like a badger? And she like changed her makeup. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's yeah.
Saucy. I like
it.
Yeah,
sorry. Spoiler alert. In one scene, the queen has bad
the
makeup.
The makeup's
on.
Bad.
Great.
So what are some news stories from 2018 that you felt that we haven't covered that you thought were things that you'll kind of hang on to or that you look back on and you're like, huh, can't believe that happened.
I feel like my personal news was great. That's the thing, too. It's like, well, this is something that I think many of us can relate to. I've had a wonderful professional and personal last few years, but the world is in chaos. And so it's like when I got engaged, my photo was in the feed and then it was like people being gassed at the border. And I'm like, shit, you know, like take it down, get the ring out of there. Because you want to be like, you know, it goes along with like that tough work that we've done of like, I canvassed, y'all. It was hot.
Yeah,
it was
in
a not great weather. And now I'm like, yeah, okay, let's celebrate some of the fruits of our labor, but kind of being like, I once said that I wouldn't get married during a Trump presidency. Now that may still come to fruition. But I've sort of had to back some of that up to be like, no, I think we really have to do it.
But you're allowed to experience joy despite the fact that the world is going to shit. Like, as long as you're not oblivious to it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I think that there's...
Thanks, guys. You're good friends.
No, I think that's a really healthy way to look at it,
too. I think that it's a form of, like, resistance to insist on finding happiness in your own life, even when what you're trying to do in terms of your civic engagement is taking on something that feels very dark and oppressive to you.
Yeah.
You know who else I loved? Those two women who stopped the elevator.
Oh, yes.
I feel like that was like a great snapshot
the elevator
of like
biddies.
How we all felt.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about the two women that interrupted Senator Jeff Flake from Arizona, followed him into an elevator during the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings and were like, Don't you think?
No,
that
look
this
at
matters?
Us.
Yeah.
And then he came back and was like, "No, oh, I guess.
Yeah,
we got to do an investigation."
Yeah, and then he voted poorly, anyways.
Well, I mean, the good news is, you know, we
and
all
now he's gone.
Now he's gone. He gets to go back to Arizona like a snowbird. That was a really important moment for sure. Also, the Laurel and Yanni debate. Very important moment.
Yes, and transcended gender, really. You know, that's one that I think struck a chord with all of us.
Yeah, everybody that I know and love agreed with me that it was stupid. So
yes.
I thought I felt very united under that. I was like, this is dumb. This is dumb that we're doing this.
Yeah.
But it's cool that we have the capacity to care about stupid shit.
I think so. I think that's important. I mean, I think that like
it used to all be stupid shit.
It did.
Well, Twitter especially used to all be stupid shit.
I know. It was just the, what color's the dress? I'm like, that was a fun time.
That came out during CPAC. I was at CPAC covering CPAC. It was CPAC 2015. And that was like, I think the same day that I met Steve Bannon. It 2015, before it was anything.
Right.
And I remember like walking down the hall. I just watched like Marco Rubio talk or something. And I was like in this very dark place.
You're feeling a little aroused.
I was pretty horned.
I'm going to have to go change.
Yeah, I was pretty horned up. I was about to retire to my bunk for the afternoon. No, but I was just, you know, it was like it's a very strange place. It's kind of like a cheerleading convention for the weirdest people in America.
Uh-huh.
And like...
Hotel Transylvania.
It was. Except the people, the cast members in Hotel Transylvania are much hotter. But yeah, the dress thing came out, and I was like, really, at a time
that's
okay.
Yeah.
But anyway, well, here's to 2019 being a year that we can care about more stupid garbage.
Yeah.
Well, I think that one thing that 2018 did very well was art. There's a lot of shows, a lot of movies, a lot of music, a lot of stuff that I think showcased women in an amazing way, and stuff that was really compelling. I feel like I watched a lot more Netflix than I ever have before. This is my year of really connecting. Thank you so much. There's just so many, like, my personal favorite female performance of the year, Maya Rudolph's character in Big Mouth.
Is she like the horny monster?
She's the horny monster, female horny monster, and she is unbelievable.
I love Maya Rudolph.
She's so awesome, and like it like transcends what you think can be done within the confines of an animated show. She's so good. You think about it, like, I don't think that we think about Big Mouth as a female driven show, and maybe it's not necessarily, but like, goddamn, the voice performances in that are so good, and she's really spectacular.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. I auditioned for a lot of important female parts that I didn't get, and that felt good.
Yeah, I would
they're
say
out there.
I would say
they're
I
out
did
there.
The same thing. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not.
You're so lucky.
I can't.
You are very lucky.
I really don't anymore. They're like, she's not going to get it.
I can't act. So that's why I don't audition for things. Well, that's year in review. Hopefully next year we have, you know, the ability to care about more stupid garbage, but also not at the expense of the stuff that matters, because I think we're moving in the right direction, guys.
1-to-1 ratio.
I think we're, yep. For every stupid thing you care about, try to care about a thing that matters.
And for everything that matters that you're forced to care about, allow yourself.
A stupid thing. That's so great.
Yeah.
Good. It's like French fries and salad.
Good rule of thumb.
It's like French fries and salad. Exactly.
Right. Right. Or that old Mitch Hedberg joke about the carrot stick and the onion ring going to his stomach at the same time, and the carrot stick gets the onion ring in.
Yes. Oh, man.
Yeah, do that, but with like stupid stuff and good stuff. Okay. Good rule going into 2019. We have to take a quick break, though. And when we come back, we have your listener submitted Hills You'll Die On. And we're back. This is a holiday episode, which means we're not actually in the studio, which means that we lazily are incorporating the Hills You'll Die On instead of our own.
Call it out. Call it out.
Instead of our own original cut. Look, it's the end of the year. I'm just coming.
I was available.
That's true. You're like the holiday orphan in LA,
yeah.
Like putting Christmas lights around a palm tree.
Oh, no. Yeah, surfing Santa.
Ugh, the worst.
You know I love it.
Disagree. But we have a couple hills.
Hi, Hysteria. My name's Molly. I'm in Virginia. I have a hill I want to die on, and it's those paper toilet seat covers that you see in public bathrooms. I think that they are useless. Mm. And I think that people who use them are bad and dumb people.
Wow.
Because a public toilet seat is not going to hurt you. And if it was going to hurt you, a little piece of paper is probably not going to save you.
Wow. Hmm. Okay. So I just started using these because
you're bad and dumb.
Well, but I used to be good. Honestly, there's just so much. I don't know. I guess maybe I kind of want to like piggyback this hill and say, ladies, can we just sit? stop hovering. You need to sit because you're hovering and then you're peeing on everything. And then that's why we need the seat covers. Your booty cheeks are the same as everybody else's booty cheeks. Mm-hmm. You know, they're booty cheeks and they're fine and they're good. And like, I would even kiss a butt cheek. I don't think a butt cheek is inherently dirty, but I think
the butt cheek of somebody that you don't know.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Who's just been on a toilet?
Not been on a toilet, but just like pulled down their pants and kiss a butt cheek.
Sure. Butts are probably more pure than
then
say.
Put the faces or hands.
Hands.
Are
yeah.
Hands.
Put the butt on the seat.
I like that. I will say that I have a gross confession here because I don't often use the seat guys. I will if they're available, but I usually take toilet paper, do a little zhuzh around, throw it in. Sometimes I'll even wash my hands and then use the bathroom because I don't trust, like, I've been in a situation where, yes, there's one of the toilet seat guys, but you put it on top of the seat and then there's pee on the seat. Uh-huh. So the toilet seat plastic thing just absorbs.
Yeah.
And
then
so then you're still sitting in pee.
Oh, and
you're
sometimes
sitting in pee.
Sometimes it gets stuck to your butt.
Yeah, that's
and then
even
you gotta
worse.
Pry it off your butt.
So there's no other solution than to either hover, which requires glutes that I do not yet have.
Sick.
Maybe in 2019.
If we were all sitting.
If we're all sitting, but in lieu of everybody sitting, somebody's still gotta get rid of that pee. So what do you do?
Because
clean it up yourself.
There wouldn't be pee on it if
I know.
We were all sitting.
Megan, I'm with you.
You know, I'm just gonna go ahead and say I used to have like really strong opinions about bathroom like seat cleanliness and like hovering versus sitting or whatever. And then I spent like 5 weeks in Nepal last year, where the toilet situation is sort of like, a lot of times, you know, on the trail, it was like, well, there's a big rock. You can go shit behind that.
Yeah.
Oh, shitting
you have
outside.
To, well, because there's no bathrooms. It's like hours and hours between bathrooms. You're just walking through the remote Everest area.
Wow.
And it was like, after that, I just kind of, I like let go of all my snobbery about bathrooms. I think that people that maybe come from places where it's always a hover situation just might be accustomed to hovering. And so I feel like maybe we should, I mean, I think that you're right that it only everybody should sit if that's the only way that sitting works is if everybody sits.
Yeah, prisoner's dilemma.
Like, but it's also it's never going to be a world where everybody sits.
You were in Nepal for 5 weeks?
I was just walking around.
I would not have pooped for 5 weeks.
Oh.
I've never done it outside. I don't know how that works.
Well, shitting outside is, that's tough.
I'll show you guys how right after this.
Oh,
go
great,
outside,
cool,
you dig a hole, right?
No. There's no digging. It's like above the tree line. It's frozen. It's like you can't.
Wait, it's freezing outside,
yeah,
too?
It was like April, and it was like 25 degrees. Anyway, guys.
Oh,
we're not going
God.
To Nepal, Grace and I.
Megan and I, we'll have some hot toddies for you. And
but that not because of the shitting outside. I would definitely shit outside.
I just don't think that my like sphincter, my anal sphincter would work. Who wants to hear us talk more about anal sphincters?
I feel like this is, you know, we get a lot of bathroom hills. We had a bathroom hill on the last Hills Giving episode where
That's
we
right.
just did hills. And we're just talking about pooping again. Let's move on to the next one before this devolves
okay.
further.
Hello, ladies. My name is Karen. And the hill that I would die on is that it's unnecessary and kind of insulting when people press the elevator button when someone is already waiting for the elevator and the button has clearly been pushed. Mm-hmm. They not know that the person waiting understands how elevators work. A side hill, also involving elevators, is when people rapidly press the elevator button multiple times in a row. What do they think that's going to accomplish? It makes no sense, and it doesn't get it to come any faster. All it does is make them look like a fool.
I hope
you guys have a great day.
I like this hill a lot because it's not about how you feel about pressing buttons. It's about how you feel when other people are pressing these buttons, which is the, I think, audience that we're not talking about often enough with this conversation. How is everybody else in the elevator feeling?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
There's a politeness that I think we're just tossing asunder there.
So I used to work at a bank, and I remember waiting for the elevator. And this might be just anecdata on my part, one thing that I noticed was that it always, like, this would happen. I'd be in the elevator, I'd hit my button, and then somebody else would get in the elevator and hit the same button that I just hit.
Uh-huh.
Like, they just wanted to make sure that my hitting the button was taken seriously. And it was usually a man.
Yeah.
It was like being in a meeting and having a man, like, just kind of repeat the thing that you just said and get acknowledgement for it. It was like, he was so accustomed to doing a thing right after a woman did it and have it be taken seriously that he does that in elevators. Now, I could just be a crazy person with a chip on her shoulder. But that's something, that's the way I always experienced it. Like, the people that are the most impatient button repeaters are like the men who would just echo what you said in a meeting and expect the credit.
Mm.
I've definitely hit a button that was lit up. But I think it comes from a place of, we cannot trust these elevator buttons.
No.
Sometimes they're not lighting up. You know, like, I've said to people before, I hit it, it doesn't light up. And then they're like, they hit it again. And that's like, you've had a conversation. You're telling them. Mm-hmm. But I'm just a rusher, you know, like that, that. So I've tapped. I also all like pop, tap, get me out of here. Close those doors. Not when someone's coming, but I'm like, close the fucking doors.
You said that.
In my brain.
In your brain.
Yeah, don't say it if someone's walking up to you.
No. I hold elevator. I've gotten smashed in a door holding it for somebody.
Traumatic.
No, if there's people. But if I'm like, well, this is mostly, I'm high in hotels a lot. Mm-hmm. And I fear for my life. And so I get in and I'm like closing those doors because I think someone's coming to kill me.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Okay. I will say, if I'm impatient and I'm pressing a button, that's usually accompanied by a heavy sigh. So you know that I'm impatient in this moment. It's not subtle. It's a situation. There's a lot of huffing that goes on. It does not happen that often. It's happened maybe 2 or 3 times in my life.
Yeah.
But when it happens, there's a soundtrack to it.
I recently realized that I need to chill out. Because I went and got my blood pressure taken, and it was like...
Oh, really?
I don't have high blood pressure. I just have normal blood pressure now. But I've always had low blood pressure.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I allow myself to get stressed out by things like being mad that somebody takes an extra second to get into the elevator or they hold it for somebody.
Yeah.
Like, my rage skyrockets, and like, I live inside my rage, and it's part of the reason why I've been able to make a living just kind of doing what I do.
Yeah.
But like, it's also kind of at the point where I'm like, I need to pick and choose my battles. Like, I don't know if elevator rage is one of the battles that I want to choose.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
I have extremely low blood pressure. Like, and not like I'm going to like keel over and die, but like low. And like, they're like, are you an athlete? And I'm like, that's so kind. So it's like that low. So that's why I feel very much at liberty to fly off the handle about everything.
That's great. Good for you.
Good
for you. Wait for like 3 more years when you're my age. And then you can, and then you'll be like, oh, I have normal blood pressure. I'm about to die.
Yeah.
My heart is on the verge of exploding.
Well, but by then I don't think I'll have the energy.
Yeah.
You know? That's
true. Yeah, I am pretty old. Like, I was carried in here on a litter by 4 burly men, set down. I'm still thinking about The Favorite, guys. I'm going
to
talk about
it. I really need to watch it.
Yeah, let's do one more hill. Do we have one more?
Yes.
Great.
Hi, Hysteria. My name is Allie, and the hill that I will die on is that people who do not fold their laundry right after it comes out of the dryer are slobby fucking pigs. I just don't get it. That shit gets wrinkly. You might as well have just not even washed it in the first place.
Damn, that's brutal.
I mean, that's obviously directed at some ex-boyfriends of
hers. Agree.
I think that she's right.
Like,
yeah, of course, but who's not folding their clothes?
Here's when I don't. If I have just done a load of towels and or linens, like table linens, sometimes I'll leave it in the dryer for a few hours / overnight. Clothes I don't do that with.
Hmm.
But I will clothes do it in there right now, but I'll refresh.
You're motioning like there's one at Crooked Media.
Yeah,
Megan has her own personal laundry.
She brought her laundry. They've got a washer dryer here, and they let us use it.
It was
if
in
we
her rider.
I agree. I also like the physical sensation of folding warm laundry
because
I think part of it is because I spent so much of my life being cold that like having the warmth of the laundry is just like it's a pleasant feeling.
Here's a question: do you fold it right there at the laundry, washer, dryer situation? Do you take it to a bed and fold it?
I fold it in front of the TV.
Me too.
Okay.
So
you put it in a basket and then you transport it to near the TV and then you do
we're
it there.
We're both like Midwestern housewives.
Wait, hold on. I'm confused.
We're yelling at people that aren't there. Are you going to empty the dishwasher?
Hold on. I have another logistical question though. So you take it from the washer dryer in a basket over to the TV.
And you sit down, you fold it on your lap.
And then you take it to the room.
And then that's double duty.
Yeah, but we're tiny little homes.
Yes.
These are not mansions.
That's
true.
Okay.
I like to watch Inside Politics while I do it.
That show specifically.
On that one, or I like Nicole Wallace on MSNBC. I am a housewife.
I'm watching like trash. I have in the past when I was like did laundry and then was like going out, or I've dumped it on my bed, and that is to signal to myself, you cannot get into this bed until you fold this laundry.
I've done that in the past and then just whooshed it over.
Slept on it.
Yeah.
Like a nest.
A little grace nest. Because I also don't really move when I sleep. So if all I need is like 10 inches and I'm good.
Oh, wow. No, I've definitely had sex on a pile of dresses. I was like, push them.
The dream.
Yeah.
The dream, Megan.
The dream. thank you guys so much for submitting. If you want to send us more, hysteria@crooked.com. But again, we're not going to come back for a month, so we're going to have a huge backlog. And I don't know what I'm going to do. Maybe just listen to them over the break. I'll Have What She's Having. This is where we talk about things that we like that women have done, or we talk about women who have inspired us, or we just talk about cool women shit that we think you guys would enjoy. So here's mine. I recently saw The Favorite, which is an artsy fartsy, like Oscar bait movie with Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz in it. And it is great. Oh, it's not just Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz. Also, Olivia Colman is in it, and she's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And the script was co-written by a woman named Deborah Davis, who wrote the script 20 years ago. So here's my take on The Favorite. I saw it earlier this week. And when
Screener or theater?
Theater.
Okay.
I went and saw it in a theater because I was like, this is a movie about like female relationships and power. And it also looks really beautiful. And yeah. I will say that it is worth seeing in a theater.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For like a lot of awards season movies are just sort of like, I could have just like watched this on my couch. Mm-hmm. This is like, see it in a theater because the set is like opulent and the costuming is incredible. Mm-hmm. The performances are great. And the acting is so good that you almost like want to see their faces enormous because you can see like everything they're doing.
This is good to know. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So definitely a scene in a theater. I will say this. My critique of it was that it felt too long for me. And at the end, I felt like very claustrophobic and angry. Mm-hmm. But after I left the theater, I saw it with Josh and we were talking about it. And I realized that like, the whole night for like hours we were talking about this movie.
Wow.
So it's like that sort of a movie. Yeah. And I keep thinking about it now. I have like a movie hangover from it. It's an incredible film that involves like kind of women jockeying for power, using their sexuality, but not in a way that is in any way for the male gaze. Mm-hmm. And watching female sexuality interplay with itself with other women and not have it be something that's like, oh yeah, fuck, men did this for men is really, really incredible.
So it passes the Bechdel test.
It 100% does.
Okay.
Rachel Weisz's character is, she's a force. She's amazing. Emma Stone is always great. Olivia Colman is funny. Like the character doesn't have funny lines, but she's just funny as like this kind of hapless Queen Anne who like doesn't quite know what she's doing. The thing that I find really inspiring about it is that the co-writer of the screenplay is also really clever and brilliant. There's like some of the best pussy jokes I've ever heard in my life.
Meow.
But they're very like.
Bury the lead on that.
Yeah, they're very low key. Like there's one scene where they're talking about healing the queen's wound that is like, this is a pussy joke.
Whoa.
It's so funny. But Deborah Davis is a co-writer. She first wrote the script 20 years ago and has been working for 20 years to get the shit made. And it finally got made. And it looks great, and she has some of the best actresses in the world involved. And it also is about sort of like the ridiculousness of men. What's that? Jennifer Lawrence's ex. I love that. That's how I know his name.
Darren Aronofsky.
No, Nicholas Holt.
Oh, my God.
Nicholas Holt is in it, and he's fantastic, but he's ridiculous. He is a ridiculous man, and the men are all costumed really. They're all very silly, and the women are the ones that are getting shit done. So it's like, it's an interesting movie. I can't say that I loved it. I think everybody should see it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that you will love seeing it, but like you will think about it for a really long time after you saw it and you'll be glad that it existed.
You said you left the theater angry.
I left the theater angry because I don't I'll tell you you offline.
Right.
It's not like that, but much of a spoiler, but I'll tell you offline.
Okay. The same director did The Lobster.
Mm-hmm.
I hated The Lobster. Like hate, but people loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I truly hated it, but there were aspects of it that I was like, I love this. It just there were parts of it that were like too harsh for me.
The things that I loved were the performances. I loved the way that the themes were explored in this kind of way that felt novel. I loved the way that the movie looked. And I loved the writing, but I felt sometimes parts of it felt like indulgently directed.
Mm-hmm.
I will say
okay,
that.
Okay, great.
Can I use that to dovetail into one of my two I'll Have What She's Having
absolutely.
For the end of the year? The first one is a shout out to all women for whom it takes 10 years or more to break into your industry. I think we've seen a lot of that lately. I hate to toot my own horn, but I will be spending January shooting an indie film that I'm starring in.
What?
Which is the first time that I have booked a lead role in a feature film in my life. And I've been in Los Angeles for 10 years. And I say that because, and I hesitated even talking about it because it's like, you know,
you're not supposed to talk about it.
You're not supposed to, whatever. But the deal's closed now and it's happening and I'm very excited about it. And it took me a second to realize, like, I really have been working towards this for a very long time. And so listening to story about Deborah Davis having worked on this one screenplay for 20 years as well is like, we are very quick to acknowledge, especially in politics this last year, like you mentioned, Megan, all these women who are like breaking through and like, oh my God, it's their first time running and look at the success and it's amazing. But there's a lot of women who have been struggling for a long time and who've seen a lot of failure. Mm-hmm. And not even failure necessarily, but just things taking time. Mm-hmm. In any industry, it takes time. Mm-hmm. And we often hear about and focus on stories of women who have a kind of immediate success. Mm-hmm. And I would like to give a shout out in 2019 to the women who are still working diligently and haven't broken through yet.
Yeah.
Because it takes some goddamn time sometimes. And that's beautiful. I think, more common than it is to
Absolutely.
See somebody breaking yeah. through in a very quick way.
Yeah, and just because you're first hearing about somebody doesn't mean they just started working on it. I think that's yeah. an important thing to remember if you're somebody
yes.
that's struggling to break into something competitive. Mm-hmm. You might think that, oh, you know, I'm just hearing about this person's breaking in and this person's
yeah.
breaking in. You don't know how long and how hard they worked. Most
yeah.
of them probably worked just as hard as you, just
yeah.
as long as you. The ones that didn't work as hard or as long as you, you know, got lucky. Everybody,
yeah.
you
yes,
know,
yes.
it's a combination of hard work and luck, and just remind yourself that people work hard.
And I also want to do a quick shout out to women in the gaming, the field of gaming and video games and gaming communities, because I think we don't often acknowledge the fact that that's a really difficult industry to be in, not just like in terms of the creators and developers, but also those who game, like women who like to spend a lot of time playing mm-hmm. video games. I think that's awesome. I think it's really cool. I think we're all headed towards a world where VR and gaming is kind of more of our culture. And mm-hmm. It can be really difficult for women to continue being in that field despite the kind of hateful rhetoric that we hear. And I just say, like, in 2019, if you're a woman who's into gaming, stick with it. Keep going with it. I think it's really cool. It's a very cool hobby. And I want to hear more stories of women who are like, fuck the hate. I'm going to continue being in this world.
Mm-hmm.
I like hearing about it.
Absolutely. Megan, what's your rec?
You know, this was an amazing year for women in sports. And obviously, she'll probably go down as the greatest athlete in our time is Serena Williams. She came back to tennis this year after having a baby. And you know, there were gender barriers and race barriers to her. The French Open said she couldn't wear what she needed to be able to wear because she was struggling with blood clots. That was something she'd struggled with before the child and then had issues with that after giving birth. And they've now since overturned that rule. She'll be able to, like, wear what she needs to, and so will other women. And it's going to make it a lot easier. And she's just shown people you can give birth to a child, become a mother, and then come back to the sport.
Mm-hmm.
Now female tennis players are going to be able to freeze their ranking. And when Serena came back, she had to start all the way from scratch, and it works on this very intense calendar. So she was having to get, like, they were having to, like, let her into Wimbledon because she'd won it more times than anyone else, and not just based on the fact that when she left the game, she was the number one player.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah.
And so she's changed that for a lot of people. Being Serena is her HBO documentary series. I think this might be the year where people are like, oh, she had a meltdown at the US Open. That's just not what happened.
Yeah.
I think she asserted her voice and felt like someone was cheating or, you know, calling something totally inaccurately. And I actually think what she did for herself, even though it may ruffle tennis fans' feathers, was exactly what she should be doing.
Yeah.
I also, though, I mean, continues to impress me, and I know you guys don't know her, is my mom. I mean, my mom is.
I feel like
that.
I know her.
Yeah.
She's so, you know, she puts her money where her mouth is in the sense of volunteers, is like a part of so many wonderful organizations, and then just takes it upon herself to check on people who are going through health issues. I mean, she is, my dad always calls her the nurse of the people. Like, she's really not even a practicing nurse anymore, but will do anything for anybody. And she's living in a red state, and she is fighting that good fight. And you know, pulled my dad left. And I think that's amazing.
Oh, she's so
I love that.
Mrs. Gailey is.
Mrs. Gailey.
Mrs. Gailey and all moms. My mom's also amazing. Yeah. And
Mary Parra as well. Yeah. Like, there's nobody stronger in my life. There isn't. I agree. I'm so glad you brought up your mom, Megan, because I care about mine deeply too. I love that.
Yeah, that generation of women, women who are around the age of our mothers, I think we need to. I just like. Have been pausing recently and thinking about women who are in that generation really like kicking ass mm-hmm. and continuing to be like the backbones of their communities mm-hmm. and their families. And listeners that are in that generation, thank you. And we love you. Okay, we have to take a break. When we come back, one final hill to die on for the year 2018. And we're back with the final hill I'll die on this year. Because this isn't a democracy, this is a cheerocracy. And I'm the cheer-tator. The hill, I want to end the year with one final hill. And that hill is fuck New Year's Eve. Fuck New Year's Eve. It is the worst holiday. It is forced fun. It is amateur hour. It takes forever to get rides to or from anywhere. You go there and it sort of feels like, you know, everybody blows their load at midnight. And then it's just like, okay, well... Now I have to reflect on my own mortality.
I agree completely. I'm with you completely. Here's a couple things. First of all, fuck New Year's Eve. Not into it. Second, if I ever get married, that is a great time to have a wedding, I will say, because nobody ever has plans.
That's what I've... Okay, but as I'm exploring this, it's three times as expensive.
I believe that. And that's a travesty. People should be getting married constantly on New Year's Eve because it's a great thing for people to go to.
And they have to stay till midnight.
And everybody's got the day off, so there's no excuse of like, I can't go or whatever. It's the only good thing about New Year's Eve. Second, I'm going to Ojai and I'm hiding away with my boyfriend and his cousins and we're not doing anything. Fuck parties.
Yeah, I'm not doing any parties either.
No?
I think I'm going to wake up early the next day and like exercise.
Absolutely.
I am going to Palm Springs with a pregnant friend. And that's
great.
But what was I? Oh, I recently watched the movie New Year's Eve. It is a hoot. Not in a good way. But I will say I worked like four New Year's Eves in a row. I was a waitress and it was incredible. I would make great money and I would be home in bed by 11 p.m.
That's great.
So that's awesome.
For the
that's
service
awesome.
Industry... It's a good day.
Very good. Yeah.
I think that the best thing that I've learned in my years, because I went through some partying years when I was in my 20s. The best way to start the year is to start it in a way that feels positive.
Yeah.
So if you feel positive waking up hungover and tired and covered in
eating all
glitter,
day.
Then yeah, do that. But yeah. I sort of have realized that the best way for me to start my year is to either go all the way out and be like, you know what, I'm staying out all night and then, you know, tomorrow's a wash, or going to bed fairly early, waking up and like going on a hike.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, fuck New Year's Eve. Thank you guys for joining me. I'm dying on this hill. Grace and Megan, thank you so much for coming to hang out.
Thank you.
Very special holiday episode.
Yes.
And, sad I'm not going to see you guys for like a month. We can get
drinks.
We'll get drinks. We'll be here.
We'll hang out.
And then we'll upload voice memos so that people can hear us like, I don't hear.
I miss my hysteria. Yeah, we'll give you guys social media fixes. That's how we'll get through this.
We'll be back.
Yeah.
And I'll be Instagramming my cat so you guys can follow up with me that way and make sure I'm okay.
My teenage daughter.
My thriving teenage daughter. Thanks so much to you listeners for tuning in this year and can't wait to see what 2019 brings. Don't take no for an answer. Girl with a mouth that's overdone. Right, cause girls just wanna have fun. So Annie, get your gun. Give them what they want. It will never be enough. You can take what you want from me. Yeah, I'll say it loud and we're gonna shut it down. All the girls to the front with me. Girls to the front.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.